Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. This is John Trudeau. Look at us. We have on the phone to give an update on Leonard's case. Wombly is the national spokesman for the Leonard Peltier Defense Offense Committee. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Daniel, thank you so much for having us on this morning to be able to speak about Leonard and his case and the parole hearing that we just had on Tuesday.
Absolutely. This parole hearing has been a long time coming. Leonard has been incarcerated for over 30 years now?
33 years.
And the whole process by which, can you explain it basically a little bit about the old law system and the process by which Leonard has been denied a parole hearing to this point?
The old law, actually there is no parole now in federal sentences. Leonard falls under the old law where prisoners are allowed parole, and to be allowed parole under the old law system, you have to complete one half of all sentences imposed upon you. Leonard had two life sentences imposed and a sentence for escape early in his imprisonment. And in his 33 years, he's accumulated enough time to serve half of both lives and half of the escape. So he was eligible for parole, fully eligible for parole for the very first time at this hearing.
Where did that formula and that system come into play in Leonard's incarceration? That wasn't the case when he was initially put in. Is that the case?
Yes, it was. When he was initially confined, he fell under the old law, and the law was changed about 5 years after he was confined. So that has been the case the whole time. The only thing is he hasn't up until this time served enough time to qualify parole under all the parameters set under the old law, the half of each sentence.
How many prisoners are in that situation? It seems like they got caught up in a almost a retroactive change in policy.
That's correct. There's actually now there are very few, and almost all of them now are held. The only jurisdiction that covers them is the parole commission, and the parole commission covers cases for the old law federal prisoners, and then again for the Washington, D.C. Prisoners. There's, I think, probably less than a dozen that now are under the old law of federal prisoners.
It just seems like, forgive me for if I sound like a conspiracy nut, it's just that it sounds to me like this system is put into place and these other prisoners under this system are being held as exceptions. They're caught up in this paperwork shuffle, and it's you know, this policy black hole. They're just being held and denied parole hearings based on this arbitrary rule that retroactively affected them.
Daniel, that's not conspiracy nut talk. That's the fact. And when people talk about conspiracies, we have to realize that our government is rifled with conspiracies that are actually true and there. All you have to do is look at the firing of the U.S. attorneys back in the Bush administration just because they wouldn't walk the political line. Leonard's whole case has been if you make a film of conspiracies that's gone on with that. He was extradited from Canada under affidavits from a lady by the name of Myrtle Poorbear, who said that she saw Leonard actually shoot the agent. The FBI coerced those affidavits from her, and later it was discovered she had never met Leonard in her life. The cartridge that the FBI said was their primary piece of evidence against Leonard, and they introduced that into trial to prove that he was the shooter. They hid the evidence that their own crime lab said the cartridge did not match the firing pin in Leonard's gun, and that didn't come out until it was discovered in FOIA papers about 5 years ago. So this has been a conspiracy right down the line. And when people talk about conspiracies, they have to realize they're out there, and you better be careful because they'll bite you.
And that brings us, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of case history and misconduct throughout his trial, his imprisonment. And I'd like to talk about the escape sentence briefly, but I also want to get to Tuesday's hearing. And real quick, my understanding is that no results have been announced. He just finally had a parole hearing, and now we wait.
That's correct. I'm actually waiting on to speak to Leonard's lawyer today. Leonard's lawyer is out of Hawaii, and he's still fast asleep this morning, so we'll talk to him this afternoon, our time. The parole hearing was held by a parole examiner on Tuesday. The examiner, at the end of the hearing, said he had already made up his mind pretty much on the parole recommendation. It was going to take 24 to 48 hours to go over the information he had and to make his recommendation to the full parole commission. During the parole hearing itself, there was two ex-FBI agents that testified against Leonard.
Who'd we see?
Well, we saw Joe Trimbach and Ed Woods. Joe Trimbach was the man that was in charge of the FBI that day at Oglala when the shootout happened. He was a special agent in charge of Minneapolis office and was in charge of that operation. This is the same FBI agent that lied on the stand in the trials of...
Robidoux and Butler, yeah?
In the trials of Banks and Russell Means.
Oh, okay.
And the Wounded Knee trial. He stated that he didn't know anything about a wiretap into the legal defense's phone system. And then the next person on the stand showed the wiretap request with his signature on it. So he's been a thorn in Leonard's side. The main reason I believe he has been like that is because what he's trying to do is throw so much smoke in the air about Leonard that people do not pay attention to his culpability in the case itself. He was responsible for all three deaths that day. People forget an Indian man by the name of Joe Stuntz was shot in the forehead that day, and there's been no investigation into that at all.
And so this, the case and the misconduct by, I mean, so these are familiar names, these two agents, trials, these farcical trials that went down.
Farcical is right.
I mentioned, you know, the Robidoux and Butler trial, which they were acquitted.
Dino and Bob both were acquitted. They were allowed to mount a self-defense defense, and Leonard was not. Bob and Dino were allowed to bring up the evidence of the reign of terror that was going on at Pine Ridge at that time, where in a three-year period, 60 people were killed and 300 people were beaten badly by what is called the goons. And what was going on at the time was a corrupt tribal chairman was trying to get traditional people to leave about one-eighth of the reservation so he could sell it back to the Interior Department for mining interest and then get a kickback from it. Over 60 people died, and the FBI had a coroner up there that would rubber stamp a death in any form that the FBI told him to. The coroner's name was W.O. Brown. Some of these cases just stand out and scream at you for justice. Two of the cases that Mr. W.O. Brown ruled suicide because the FBI instructed him to, they stabbed themselves to death in the face. Daniel, can you imagine somebody stabbing themselves in the face?
It's a challenge.
Oh, it's just amazing. And Dino and Bob were allowed to introduce this evidence, and when a jury heard this evidence, they acquitted them by reason of self-defense. And the self-defense law is very simple. It states if you are attacked by an aggressor using deadly force, it is reasonable to respond with deadly force. And the jury hearing this evidence found that the FBI was the aggressor that day using deadly force, and that Dino and Bob had the right to respond with deadly force to protect themselves and the elders at Jumping Bull, and therefore they were acquitted.
In other words,
this was not allowed to be introduced in Leonard's trial.
But so context and extenuating circumstances, these were not allowed in Leonard's trial.
Not at all. Not at all.
Whereas these...
In Bob and Dino's trial, notes from the FBI field agents were allowed to be introduced into the trial. In Leonard's case, they were not allowed to be able to be introduced. Evidence was withheld. Like I said, evidence of the cartridge not matching Leonard's gun, that was withheld.
So from the start, we've seen a disparity in justice.
Yes, we've seen a justice system. You know, I'm an artist. That's how I make my living. And an artist will paint a piece, put it, and then frame it. What they did with Leonard was they made the frame and then painted, and they filled in what they wanted to fill in.
And then besides the trial, the sentencing, we talked a little bit about the appeals process in regards to him being an old law prisoner. But he's had evidentiary hearings and appeals in the past, And these also haven't gone the way of anything that could be described as justice.
No way. You're absolutely right. You know, there was an appeal once the FOIA papers revealed the teletype from the FBI crime lab to the FBI field office in Minneapolis that the cartridge didn't match. There was an appeal on that. The judge said, again, this was a change in law. The judge said the old law said if it was a possibility that evidence would have changed the verdict, then a new trial could be ordered. But the law had been changed to probability instead of possibility. One more hitch that just absolutely kept Leonard in confinement when the appeal was made on the Poor Bear affidavits. You know, I have the records of the appeal on that, and the judge on the appeals court just admonished the prosecutor who was defending the appeal, and the prosecutor was backing off as fast as he could back off, saying, I wasn't there at the time, I know this is wrong. The judge says, you know that that the FBI coerced these statements, and the prosecutor said, yes, we do. Yet still the appeal on that was denied. So what we come to eventually is we have to realize in a political system that fails a person like this political system has failed Leonard, it's a pure symptom of what a real political prisoner is. He is a political prisoner. The powers that be have wanted him confined and kept in confinement as a lesson to the Indian people of this country that if you step out of line, we don't care. And if you act like you're going to step out of line, we can frame you and put you in jail for life. And the FBI has said that Leonard will not leave jail alive. There has been two attempts on his life in prison set up by the FBI, and Standing Deer was involved in one, and he told Leonard about it. And Standing Deer, after he got out of prison, started speaking about it, and he was visited by the person who set him up to assassinate Leonard in prison and told if he didn't shut up that he would die. And Standing Deer would not shut up and did not shut up, and he was murdered in Houston about 6 months later. We have to understand that the state we live in, the system we live in, has an underground power system that if they want to damage you, they can damage you, and it can happen to any of us. But we're very hopeful right now on this parole, very truthfully. We're very, very hopeful. We think that the current administration and the current political atmosphere will allow this parole to come through.
And so this isn't an evidentiary hearing. It isn't an appeal. There was no evidence entered into this hearing. This was simply that he's due for parole, that he's served his time. Guilt or innocence, miscarriage of justice or no, this parole hearing on Tuesday was just, it's time to let him go.
Basically so, but Daniel, the parole commission can rule what is called above or below the line. Ruling above the line lets them take into consideration wrongdoings that have been uncovered in the past and take that into their consideration of the parole request. And during the hearing, the FBI, the two FBI agents, introduced the same line of stuff that they put out for many, many years. And the lawyer said it's the same old stuff they put out. It's nothing new. But we were able to enter evidence to present to the parole commission that they have never seen before. And, you know, Bob Robidoux was tried for those deaths and found innocent by reason of self-defense. There we entered emails from Ed Woods and Bob Robidoux, an email exchange back and forth, where Bob Robidoux said three times that he fired the kill shots. Now, we've all known Bob has done it. He's told us all he could fire the kill shots. Leonard will never say that. Leonard's not going to say that.
Of course.
He's just not. That's just the way it is. But we had good people representing Leonard. The lawyer was good. We had Peter Matheson, who wrote...
In the Spirit of Crazy Horse?
Spirit of Crazy Horse. He was in the hearing. He testified for Leonard. A representative of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indian testified for Leonard that he would have a
place to go,
to live, a place to teach. So we had good representation there. We had letters from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, from Amnesty International. Robert Redford was supposed to be there, but he got married in Europe and was still hanging in Europe, but he sent a letter in support of Leonard. And Redford did Incident on Oglala. I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah, I would recommend anyone listening who's hearing some of these names or these incidents and wants more information to check that out. It's actually available online.
Yeah, it explains it very, very well.
Yeah,
and it'll show people what actually happened that day, and it's a very truthful documentary, very well done.
And you see Bob and Dino as well as those FBI agents appear.
Exactly. Bob and Dino both right at the very start of the film, actually. And, when I see Bob, my heart is sad because Bob died in March from a seizure while he was in Spain. He had the American Indian Movement Museum over in Spain, and he was there working at it and had a seizure and fell and hit his head and died, which we think is very suspicious also, actually, because he was coming back to the States within 10 days of his death. He'd already told us all he was coming back. He's going to New Mexico. I had several messages from him saying he couldn't wait to get back. And he was just going to come out, flat out, and make public statements about he did fire the kill shots. And we don't think, I think that his death is very suspicious. We will never know because they didn't allow his body to be returned to the States.
Interesting. Well, I want to thank you for your time this morning and for your work on this case and speaking on behalf of Leonard. I hope that within the next few weeks we all hear news of his pending release and that Leonard will be able to step outside and, as he's stated, walk home.
That's right. I would like just half a second, Daniel.
Oh, absolutely.
Your people can help us right now. Your listeners can help the case by exerting pressure on Obama to put his influence into this parole situation. And we're asking people all over the world to call the White House comment line and simply say, please support parole for Leonard Peltier. It's very easy to say, please support parole for Leonard Peltier. And that comment line number is 202-456-1111. Once more, that's 202-456-1111. And ask the President of the United States to please support parole for Leonard Peltier. He's America's number one political prisoner.
Again, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Daniel. Good luck to all of you on the West Coast today.
Absolutely.
Oakshaw.
All right, thank you. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1, www.freakradio.org, and Wambly. Wambly from the Leonard Peltier Defense Offense Committee. With an update on Peltier's case. Stay tuned.